Don't let Rob fool you. It's actually not going to get dark enough to where I can't tell whether you're asleep or not. I want to apologize a little bit up front. You're not going to be able to see the pictures quite as well as I'd like you to be able to see them. The colors just don't come out very well on the screen. Hopefully I will be able to put the PowerPoint online, so you should be able to see them online. Also, I have with me a book that if you want to see it, Israel from the Air, and they're old pictures, so they're not necessarily the best quality, but they certainly will convey the idea that I want to get across this afternoon. So last week, Dylan had this incredible task of finishing the book of Ezekiel and going over something like 8 chapters in the one class, which is a daunting task. And in Ezekiel 47, it started talking about this river that was coming from the temple. And it goes down to the Dead Sea. And I wanted to talk about the Dead Sea and to allow you to understand a little bit better how that passage, what that passage would mean to me or to anybody who had been in this area, what they thought of when they heard this particular prophecy. So we're going to talk about the Dead Sea this afternoon. And I want to give you some pictures of the area around the Dead Sea. So, yeah, Rob, if you can't see, that there's not a lot of point to this. You should move a little bit to where you can see. Okay, so the Dead Sea is never called that in the Bible. It's called different things. The Sea of Arabah in Genesis 14 and verse 3. In addition, it talks about the Valley of Shittim, which we'll see later on. It's called the Salt Sea rather frequently, and for very good reason. This is the Dead Sea is 10 times saltier than the oceans. And that's what makes it so dead. And then in Zechariah, it is referred to as the Eastern Sea. And so you have the Western Sea, which is the Mediterranean, also called the Great Sea. And then on the Eastern Sea, that's the Dead Sea. And so we have this map that I believe most of us are familiar with, the Bible lands, the Promised Land, with Judea down here and Jerusalem right in here. And then you have the Jordan River, Sea of Galilee, and the Dead Sea. When Bonnie and I went over here, we were taking a bus, and we came from over here down to the Sea of Galilee, and all of a sudden you just start dropping. And then you come to this sign that says, this is the sea level, and you stand at that sign and you look down at the Sea of Galilee below you. So the Sea of Galilee is below sea level. And then the Jordan River goes down from there in this rather large valley. All of it is below sea level until you get to the lowest point on earth, on the surface of the earth, and that's the Dead Sea, some 1,000 feet below sea level. And it is it's about 31 miles long. So from here to here is about 31 miles, about 9 miles wide. It's actually facing this crisis right now to where it's disappearing. So much water is taken from the Jordan River, which I hope to be able to convey here in a second. But so much water is being taken that the Dead Sea is dying. And they're actually looking at various ways of reviving the Dead Sea by taking water from the oceans and putting it in there. That's really not that important for our lesson. But it doesn't look like it does in our pictures. This is what it looked like back then. Today, this part's cut off and it's basically two different seas. At any rate, we're going to look at Masada and then up here at Qumran, and we'll come over here on the right-hand side and see a few pictures from over there. I want you to understand the terrain, what's around the Dead Sea. And it's not going to shock you, but the Dead Sea is surrounded by dead land. It kills everything around it. So this picture is taken from Masada, and again, here's where you can't see the details very well. Hopefully you can see it well enough. What you're really missing is the colors. It's red. It looks like sand, like if you've been to sand dunes, it looks like that kind of color. What it doesn't look like is green, or like it has a lot of twigs and plants all over the place. This is just very desolate land. What you're looking at right there actually is a first century Roman encampment, which was used to lay siege to the final rebellion against Rome when Jerusalem fell. This is the ultimate final battle that came after that at Masada. And you can still see the Roman encampment there. And so here's looking from Masada down to the east, and you can see the Dead Sea right here. This little section right there is that little part at the southern part where it looks like, you know, it gets really narrow and then it gets wide again. Well, right now it actually doesn't get narrow. That land goes all the way across. But that's the part of the Dead Sea that you're looking at. And again, the colors, we're missing the colors, but this is a whitish color and this is reddish color, and what it is not life. This whole area is full of death. It's not a place where you're going to plant things, where you're going to see much life at all. And you can see this little line here is where a river, a wadi, would go through. A wadi is basically just a dry river. Every now and then it gets water in it. Okay, so here again, this is from Masada. We're looking up. You see the same thing. Here's these wadis. And the along the wadis, you can see the occasional bush. These have to be very hardy plants because they're only going to have water a few days of the year. And so it's a very, very dry land in this area. Okay, so here's the cliffside of Masada. Here's the other cliffside. So you're looking at everything down below here is below sea level. And again, you just see how dead everything is. Now we go up to the north end of the Dead Sea. We're up in the Qumran area. And this is where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found behind this. But flat, dead, nothing. That's the image any Jew had of the Dead Sea. Flat, dead, nothing. And salt. Lots of salt. Okay, so this is an area where you have a clearly more interesting terrain. A wadi, a river, would go through here and created some interesting formations. But again, what you see is a complete lack of life. It's the Dead Sea. That's why we call it that. This is right where the Dead Sea Scrolls were found. Again, you have a little river. Well, it's not really a river. It's just a dry bed. Actually, in Colorado, we can kind of relate to that because we have lots of rivers that aren't rivers, right? You drive over this bridge, you say, why is there a bridge here? Well, if it rains, there might need to be one. But normally, no, there's nothing going on there. Same thing there. Again, nothing. Sea of Galilee is actually that thing in the back. Dead Sea is that there in the back. This is taken from a bus, and oh wow, it's hard to see across, but that's the other side of the Dead Sea. This is looking down at the Dead Sea. You'll notice there's some areas in here. This would have normally been underwater. During the first century when we read the Bible, all of this was underwater. In fact, the road was probably underwater. It's just receding so far. But you do get things like this down here, these little marshes, little separate bodies of water. This is important because Ezekiel does talk about these in chapter 47. Okay, go to the other side, the western side of the Dead Sea. Eastern side of the Dead Sea. This is, if you can see the white along here, along the edge, that's salt. That is where it's decayed, and you just have caked pieces of salt along there because the Dead Sea has just so much salt that when it evaporates, it leaves white shores. Okay, so then this is the river, Arnon River, if I remember correctly. And see a little bit further, you can see the terrain, just cliff sides. If you turned around from where I'm looking, Dead Sea right there. You're standing right at the edge of the Dead Sea. And so this water comes in. What you can't see from this picture is this doesn't look like water. Not the kind of water where you want to go down with a cup and grab some and say, refreshing water. This is more like the kind of water that has been had chalk or something like that in it. You mix it all up and it gets that really chalky type color. That's what that water looks like. And that's what the Dead Sea is all about. It's about messed up, filthy water pouring into this this sea, and it doesn't go anywhere. The Dead Sea gets water from this tiny river, the Jordan River, and then the occasional other rivers, and it can't go anywhere else because you're at the lowest place on earth. And so the water just stays there. And all of the water can evaporate, but all of the particles within it, the salt and the various minerals, those remain. So let's go way up to the north. This is north of the Sea of Galilee. This is the Jordan River, and it is really hard to get a picture of it. It's pretty wide. It's fast moving. And so, but the water looks great up at this point. well, they've been taking all the water, so the water gets much smaller. This is right to the north of the Sea of Galilee. Sea of Galilee is right there. And now it's really tiny, and it's calm, and the water's starting to get less good-looking. You go to the other side of the Sea of Galilee, again, not very wide, but it's pretty calm. And this is just going to meander down through to the Sea of Galilee. And as it's going, it's just picking up more and more junk, more and more minerals and things that it's just going to dump into the Dead Sea, which becomes the trash pile of water, I guess. So this is now just north of the Dead Sea, and you can't see it, but that's brown. It's just an icky brown color, and it's dumping all of this into the Dead Sea. When we were there, we were blessed with a great opportunity. It rained. It very, very rarely rains over here. And so one night it rained while we were staying in Jerusalem. We got out on the bus, and that was the day we were going down to the Dead Sea into Jericho. And so as we were headed down to Jericho, we stopped to see this area. It's an area that Elijah probably hid. And what you could see is this is a wadi that had turned into this huge waterfall, and it's taking these boulders down into the Dead Sea. But it is as filthy brown as you can get. It looks a little like the water we get in Manitou right now with the floods. When the floods come through, that water is just taking all this soot and other stuff down. It looks like that. To back up a little bit, now you see the great wilderness. When I read wilderness in the Bible, I always thought forest. You don't think forest when you think wilderness in the Bible. It's like mountainous desert. But here's the waterfall that we had a picture of. Here's a wadi down here, normally dry, and right now it's strong enough to take boulders. So all this is going down to the Dead Sea. Here we are right next to Jericho. We see the river that is taking all of this stuff. It's going to go dump into the Jordan and then go into the Dead Sea. So everything moves down into there. Nothing comes from it. And so it is just a source, a soup of minerals, and especially salt. Okay. So this is on the side of the Dead Sea. All that is salt chunks. Just salt chunks about that thick. I found a little bit better piece than that. Have it at home that I kept from the Dead Sea. Okay, so if Ryan could turn on the lights, keep this in mind. Keep this image of this dead area in mind. And let's look at Ezekiel chapter 47 for a second and see what prophecy was made to them. So in Ezekiel 47, what we have is the shift has occurred within the book of Ezekiel. Up until the time of the destruction of Jerusalem, these people that are in Babylon keep thinking, well, maybe we'll survive, maybe we'll get back. But once Jerusalem is sacked and the temple is destroyed, the people then become into ultimate despair, and now they have no hope, and the prophets change their view. The prophets were saying, "It's all you're going to lose, we're going to lose, we're going to lose." As soon as they lose, the prophets then turn around and say, "It's going to get better, it's going to get better, it's going to get better." And so we're in this, it's going to get better time. When he's going to talk about the temple having water come from it, which means the temple's going to be rebuilt. You lost it, it's going to come back. So let's start off in chapter 47, verse 1. It says, "Then he brought me back to the door of the house, and behold, water was flowing from under the threshold of the house toward the east. For the house faced east, and the water was flowing down from under, from the right side of the house, from south of the altar." So here he's describing water coming from the temple. "He brought me out by way of the north gate and led me around on the outside to the outer gate by the way of the gate that faces east. And behold, water was trickling from the south side." If you're familiar with Jerusalem, he's now in the valley of Kidron. And he's right outside the temple, and there's a little bit of water just trickling through. "When the man went out toward the east with a line in his hand, he measured 1,000 cubits, and he led me through the water, water reaching the ankles. Again he measured 1,000 and led me through the water, water reaching the knees. Again he measured 1,000 and led me through the water, water reaching the loins. Again he measured 1,000, and it was a river that I could not ford, for the water had risen enough water to swim in, a river that could not be forded." And so he's saying, okay, so we got from the temple, we start going down, and oddly enough, this little trickle keeps getting bigger. He says, every 1,000 feet, it was like doubling in size. At first, it's my ankles, then it's up to my knees, then it's up to my loins. Now I can't even get through this river, which is a pretty fascinating thing given this terrain that you would have a river of this nature there. But we're still in the neighborhood of Jerusalem. So we pick up then in verse 6. And he said to me, Son of man, have you seen this? Then he brought me back to the bank of the river. Now when I had returned, behold, on the bank of the river there were very many trees on the one side and on the other. Then he said to me, these waters go out toward the eastern region and down into the Arabah. Then they go toward the sea, being made to flow into the sea, and the waters of the sea become fresh. It will come about that every living creature which swarms in every place where the river goes will live. And there will be very many fish, for these waters go there and the others become fresh. So everyone will live where the river goes. And it will come about that the fishermen will stand beside it from En-Gedi to En-Eglaim. There will be a place for the spreading of nets. Their fish will be according to their kinds, like the fish of the great sea, very many. But its swamps and marshes will not become fresh. They will be left for salt. By the river on its banks, on one side and on the other, will grow all kinds of trees for food. Their leaves will not wither, and their fruit will not fail. They will bear every month, because their water flows from the sanctuary, and their fruit will be for food, and their leaves for healing. All right, so Ryan, if you can get the lights again real quick, we're going to look at some satellite images now. Okay, so this is the Dead Sea. And right up here is Jerusalem. And what Ezekiel was saying is there's going to be water flowing from the temple in Jerusalem down to the Dead Sea. And what he said was going to happen when it hit the Dead Sea, when this water hits the Dead Sea, the Dead Sea is going to become the Living Sea. The salt will all just be gone. So Dylan asked, you know, whether this was something that they foresaw to be a literal fulfillment or a spiritual fulfillment. They immediately know you're talking absolute miracle here. There is no way this is anything but a miracle occurring for water to come from Jerusalem and for it to be a river to begin with, and then for it to hit this large body and boom, it's all of a sudden fresh water. So let's zoom in up here. And so here we have Jerusalem right here, and about 10 miles over is the Dead Sea, and we'll zoom in a little bit further. So we have the Dead Sea right there. That's the temple area right here. And the Valley of Kidron comes down, and it comes in here, and then it goes up and over through here until we get right there. And so you'll notice, even though you can't see the colors quite right here, I think you can get the idea that this is actually civilization. This is plant life. This is not. For the vast majority of this trip, you're talking about absolute dead terrain. And what Ezekiel has just said, there's going to be this trickle of water that's going to come from the temple, and it's going to grow, and it's going to grow, and it's going to grow. And there are going to be fishermen along the sides of this river with nets that are going to be able to catch all kinds of fish, like if you were at the Mediterranean Sea. And there's going to be lining all along this river. There's going to be trees growing on both sides. Can you imagine how this was a fascinating, impossible thing for a Jew to understand, for a Jew to believe, when they picture this desolate land going to the Dead Sea? And now it's going to be a life-giving river that finally, when it hits the Dead Sea, this tiny little river, as big as it might get, it's still tiny in comparison to the Dead Sea will become the Living Sea. It will no longer be the Salt Sea. It'll be a place of life. Okay. Well, we're not done. Okay, so get the lights again, and we're done with pictures, but I want you to see this with scriptures. What we're talking about is the river of life. And I want us to read a few other passages. Joel chapter 3, verse 18, towards the very end of Joel. Joel comes before Ezekiel. So Ezekiel was not the first one to write of this concept, of this river that's coming through from the temple. Ezekiel just gave us the most detailed picture of what it's going to accomplish, of how large it's going to get, of the life that's going to come from it. But Joel, speaking to people that again are oppressed, that again are going to face difficulty, and hey, we're going to be restored. He speaks of this restoration, says, "And in that day, the mountains will drip with sweet wine, and the hills will flow with milk, and all the brooks of Judah will flow with water, and a spring will go out from the house of the Lord to water the valley of Shittim." So this is the river that Ezekiel's talking about. It's going to come from the house of the Lord, and it's going to go down to the valley of Shittim. That's the Dead Sea. We go to Zechariah. Zechariah comes after Ezekiel. They just overlap just a tiny bit. And suddenly we understand this fountain, this river that Ezekiel was describing, isn't this literal river that's going to come through and give literal life to the land. No, it's something better than that. It says, "In that day a fountain will be opened for the house of David and for the inhabitants of Jerusalem, for sin and for impurity." And so rather than it talking about giving physical life, he starts talking about spiritual life. And in Zechariah chapter 14 and verse 8, it says, "And in that day living waters will flow out of Jerusalem, half of them toward the eastern sea and the other half toward the western sea. It will be in summer as well as in winter." And so now he's talking about this river, this spiritual river giving spiritual life, is a perpetual river. It's not something that's going to come for just a little period of time. This is something that we're going to need, and it's going to provide for us for all time. Jesus then refers to this. So now we're going to skip forward about 500 years or so to the book of John. And Jesus is in Jerusalem for one of the festivals. He is standing in the temple complex. So this is the area that Ezekiel had said, from this area right here, a little trickle is going to start. And it's going to grow, and it's going to grow, and it's grow, and it's going to give life to everything it passes through. So it says, "Now on the last day, the great day of the feast, Jesus stood and cried out, saying, 'If anyone is thirsty, let him come to me and drink. He who believes in me, as the scripture said, from his innermost being will flow rivers of living water.' But this he spoke of the Spirit, whom those who believed in him were to receive, for the Spirit was not yet given, because Jesus was not yet glorified." And so Jesus, standing at this place, says, the river's coming. The river of life is going to come from within you. And he speaks, of course, of the Spirit that those first century Christians are going to have, and that we receive the great benefit of this Word of God. And then we get to the end of the book of the Bible, Revelation. In Revelation, we see the river, the water of life, once again. And so Revelation chapter 7, verses 13 through 17. John has just seen this image, this vision, and it's now being explained to him. He says, "The one of the elders answered, saying to him, 'These who are clothed in the white robes, who are they and where have they come from?' I said to him, 'My Lord, you know.' And he said to me, 'These are the ones who come out of the great tribulation, and they have washed their robes and made them white in the blood of the Lamb. For this reason, they are before the throne of God, and they serve him day and night in his temple. And he who sits on the throne will spread his tabernacle over them. They will hunger no longer, nor thirst any more, nor will the sun beat down on them, nor any heat. For the Lamb in the center of the throne will be their shepherd, and will guide them to springs of the water of life, and God will wipe away every tear from their eyes." And then he speaks about this once again in Revelation chapter 22, as we come to the end of the Bible, the final revelation that we receive. He again is talking about this river. Verse 1, "Then he showed me a river of the water of life, clear as crystal, coming from the throne of God and of the Lamb." And we saw what that river was supposed to do in Ezekiel. Then go down to verse 17. "The Spirit and the bride say, 'Come.' And let the one who hears say, 'Come.' And let the one who is thirsty come. Let the one who wishes take the water of life without cost. And so we see this water of life becoming a theme of God's restoration, not physically, spiritually, of God taking a land that is as desolate as you can think of and making it alive. God taking a people as dead as you can think and making them living is this image that we're getting. And it's all coming from God. And so when the people read Ezekiel 47 and they see this description of this water of life, what it means is several things. One is it means that God is able to take those who are as oppressed as can be, those who are perhaps in the Babylonian land and are being enslaved and have a miserable life, and God's able to restore them. He's able to fully, completely restore them. And it's just as much true today. You may feel like your life is in a desert in regards to blessings, like everything is miserable and horrible. And there is a God who can fix that. From His temple, from His throne, from Him comes the water of life. And then there are those who die physically, and all of us have to endure this. And we think about the Valley of Dry Bones just a few chapters earlier in Ezekiel. And what we see again is this idea of you have this death, this area of nothing but death, and God can restore it to nothing but life. And so, as much as we may decay, we may die and our bodies may be cremated. We may die and we just decay to such a degree that there's nothing but dust that is left. But here's the power of God. He can create a river that starts off as a trickle, and when it hits the Dead Sea, it can turn it to nothing but life. The physical resurrection is not without, outside of God's power, is the image that is being given to us. And then finally, that spiritual resurrection. Those who are dead spiritually, whose heart is filled with nothing but death and decay, whose mind and life, they're going through so many difficulties, they're caught in so many things that are sinful and wicked, and you think there's no hope for me. There's the water of life. A river that comes from God that makes the dead living and thriving. Any of us, whatever we face, any of you, whatever challenges you're going through, turn to this water. Turn to God. And you will find that your death, that which is decaying you from the inside, can be completely removed and replaced with nothing but life. And so, as Revelation ends, as this image of the Bible comes to an end, it's an invitation. Come. If you are thirsty, come and drink freely of the water of life. What an image this had for the Jews. What an image it has for me, having been there. And I hope it's an image that you can better understand now. If you're not a Christian, the invitation is a beautiful one. It is one that says you can be restored, made right with God, blessed with the things that God wishes to give to you. Eternal life. Life with Him. If you're a Christian and you have fallen away, we ask you to come back now. Won't you come as we stand and as we sing?